Good evening from Washington. I'm Truman Taylor. The name of our program is The Senators Respond, with Senator John Chafee of Rhode Island and Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts, every 3 weeks here on Channel 6 at the same time. We come to you and we're asking the senators the questions which you've mailed to us over the course of the past 3 weeks. And that's a good spot for me to remind everyone to send those questions, any question that you have for either Senator Kennedy or Senator Chafee, to The Senators Respond, WTV 6, New Bedford, Massachusetts, or Providence, Rhode Island. Because there are a couple of items that are really currently in the news and things that have been happening all this week in regard to them, and the questions have not come in from the listeners, but I know that there's an extreme amount of interest in, for instance, Senator Kennedy, the Indian land situation down in Mashpee. It's, of course, in the courts, in a federal court now in Boston, and there is something happening now in Washington. Can we just kind of take a quick minute before we get to the other questions to update the Mashpee situation?
Well, as you quite appropriately pointed out, Truman, it's a matter that is before the courts now in Boston. It's an enormously complex issue that runs to the earliest days of our own Commonwealth of Massachusetts and involves the federal government and state government activities. What we have tried to do, Senator Brooke, myself, and Congressman Studs, is to find if there was some common ground in which the Indian tribes and the local people could agree to, that we could get the support from the federal government, because obviously what we do in Mashpee will have some impact on future courses of action where there are other kinds of questions and disputes. It seemed to me that we were very close to working out the clearance of title for homeowners, which I think is the most pressing problem. This is the one that has brought the greatest kinds of anxieties and the greatest hardship to individuals, to elderly people, people that have been transferred out or moved out of the area, or who have been transferred in their jobs to other parts of the country that are have a cloud over their title. And it's brought around a very considerable hardship to those individuals, the individual homeowners, as well as an unsettling situation in the community. Now, we were able to get an agreement from the Indian tribes that with regards to the issue of title, and we were hopeful from the townsfolks to agree to the payment of the settlement for that particular issue for some $4 million out-of-court settlements on it. And this, in effect, would have cleared the a title, and in that disputed area, it would have left open the questions of the undeveloped land, but in effect it would have freed up the title that is brought for homeowners. Now, the Indians have agreed to that. We had objection by that from the townspeople on Friday before the Senate committee. We had strong support from Senator Arbaresque and from Senator Metzenbaum, other members of the committee. I think we had an excellent chance of reaching a legislative solution in the Senate. But the fact that now that the towns felt that they would not go along with that kind of a payment has effectively terminated the legislative possibilities. I think that's very regrettable, because obviously we cannot superimpose a judgment legislatively that hasn't got the active support of the various groups. And this seemed to me to be a way of reaching for a very nominal amount of federal resources, relieve the anxiety and the pain and anguish of people within that community. And I think an important opportunity has been lost. I regret the decision of the selectmen, who I think, quite frankly, were probably perhaps speaking more for the developer than they were for the homeowners. But they're the ones that can speak for themselves on it. But I think it was unfortunate they made that decision, and it's virtually going to tie the hands for a legislative solution.
Was their main objection, the townspeople's main objection, to the fact that the legislation only applied to parcels of land of 1 acre or less?
It was. They wanted to extend it to some of the underdeveloped land, which I can understand if I was a developer. I can understand why that was so. But by doing that, it effectively, I think, has precluded the opportunity for settlement for the homeowners and the ones that had intended to be able to settle it for. I just think it's an important opportunity to be lost. We're not going to give up on trying to find some common grounds, but I don't think there's any question that that's a serious setback.
Senator Chafee, will this same thing, do you think, hold true in Charlestown, where, as I understand it, the Rhode Island Indians have been offered $1 million for that 17 acres of land that has been developed, the residential land?
1,700 acres.
1,700, I'm sorry.
We're not quite as far along as they are in the Mashpee settlement, and ours is all tangled up in the courts as well. What we're trying to do is to get the president to appoint an arbiter or investigator, as he did with the the judge he appointed for the mainlands, and that's the route we're pursuing. We wrote the president, all of us from the Rhode Island delegation, asking him to do this.
Okay, the other thing that, in kind of an update situation before we get to the main questions from the listeners that I want to talk about, because it is so much in the news, is the massive layoffs which the Electric Boat Division of General Dynamics came up with this past week for both Connecticut, southeastern Connecticut, and Rhode Island. And I'm sure some people in nearby Massachusetts are also affected. I know that the delegation from Rhode Island and from Connecticut is doing its best to try to get a change of heart on the part of Electric Boat, but it doesn't seem to be going to work, at least not yet. Valiotos, the general manager there, certainly has told Alec Grasso, Governor Grasso, that his decision is irrevocable. Shouldn't a military contractor, a defense contractor, such as General Dynamics, be bound somehow contractually when he's dependent so much on the government? Shouldn't he be bound not to do this to the states without warning, to all of a sudden turn around and say, by the way, I'm laying off 3,000 of your people next week?
I think what upset us so much was, first of all, that the layoffs took place, and secondly, as you mentioned, the manner in which the layoffs were done in such a drastic way, just chopped. Handed a pink slip to 3,000 pink slips to 3,000 people that very day. I think it'd be very difficult for the federal government to write particular language in with all their defense contractors, because their union contracts, their different procedures in the different states with the different shops. I think what we really should hope for is that the people we deal with would have a better way of proceeding than those layoffs were brought about. Now, Mr. Valiotos says there's no gentle way of laying people off, that you get everybody upset if you do it in a staggered manner. If you let them know that 2 weeks from now you're going to be laid off, then everybody else thinks they're going to be laid off as well. So that's his defense, but I don't agree with him. I thought it could have been done in a much better way.
You think we're stuck with it, though? Yeah.
I think you know our conversations with Mr. Valiotos were last week. They were that he could immediately use 1,100 people with different skills. He could use welders, and he could use
plumbers, electricians,
machinists, yeah. More of the blue-collar trades, as it were. But he had the wrong mix of people, according to him. He said some of those people that are laid off can go back. They were formerly blue-collar workers who'd come up into the semi-management area. They could go back, revert back to their blue-collar jobs. Also, he stated that within a year and a half, that the total employment of EB will be up close to the 30,000 they are now. But it'll be a different mix. Some might get their jobs back, but it'll be primarily a different mix. Now, what can we do to help? We said to him that we wanted to make sure that the training facilities were available to teach our people the skills they need to get these different jobs. We said we'd go to bat for him on the Navy contracts, on the Navy claim. As you know, they've got a claim for $544 million. We said we'd do everything we could to help with that. He said that wasn't tied in with the layoffs. Now, I don't know. To me, it would seem that when you're owed $544 million, it must affect you in some manner.
Let's get to the questions that have come in now. For I think that we've got one from Norman Hunt of Plymouth, Massachusetts, for Senator Kennedy. Senator, already 42 firms, Mr. Hunt says, have signed leases for land or buildings at Quonset Point or Davisville, Rhode Island, to locate support facilities for test drilling for oil and gas off the New England coast. It seems that the oil industry, he says, is going to make Rhode Island its base for offshore exploration. Can't the Massachusetts delegation do something to get a bigger piece of this action?
This takes the Quonset location has some special attractions, which I think have offered themselves to the oil and gas industry in the exploratory phase. There have been some very strong indications of commitments for by oil and gas companies in the Fall River area, and also strong indications of interest in the New Bedford area for development and production. But we haven't reached that. And the actions, or the failure of action that was taken in the House of Representatives this past week in the Rules Committee, bottling up the Outer Continental Shelf legislation, may make the question of actual exploration and drilling problematical for a few months in any event. But I think that there's good opportunities exist in New Bedford and Fall River. It takes the combined and joint efforts of mayors, of governors, as well as a congressional delegation, and a particular a community site which lends itself to this type of a situation. Beyond that, the principal openings have been in the Baltimore Canyon, which have offered up more openings to the Mid-Atlantic area rather than off the northern New England and in the southern New England coast. And so there's been a great deal of the orientation, as I understand it, has been focused in that area by those that have come on in to Rhode Island. I'm very hopeful we can, there's going to be a resource of gas or oil in those areas, that it's going to mean new opportunities in the communities in southeastern Massachusetts. But it'll be done in such a way as not to be destructive, but constructive, in terms of what it'll mean for employment, and also in terms of the real environment in those communities itself.
Senator Chafee, what do you think about that? Do you think Rhode Island, after this, if it does indeed change the locale down to Georgia's Bank, is maybe going to fall by the wayside as far as this is concerned?
No, not if we can help it in any way. We want Massachusetts to prosper and thrive and get any of the companies that overflow from Quonset. But no, we're making a tremendous effort in this direction. As Senator Kennedy mentioned, we do have the facilities, which is a big head start in the Davisville area with the piers there. Secondly, the state administrations have been very vigorous in this. Governor Noel took the lead when he was governor, and Governor Garahey's followed up. I just came back this morning myself from New Orleans, where both those governors, the former governor and present governor, plus many of our civic leaders, were last night at a gathering for the local oil people down there in order to show them that we love them and we want them to come up and establish facilities at Quonset and Davisville. So I think things look good. And first of all, we got to find the oil. Now, so far they haven't found any, but I certainly hope they will. And this Outer Continental Shelf bill that Senator Kennedy was referring to, that's got to pass too. And I hope it will.
You do hope it will. I was just going to say, can we talk a little bit about that? The Senate passed the bill last summer. It went to the House, where, as you said, it has been bottled up in the Rules Committee and put off till next year. Now, this was going to completely...
Well, I'm not sure it's been put off till next year. It probably will fall between the cracks in this year, but I don't think it's definitely killed for this year, but just because of the time urgency, I suspect it won't. It won't make it this year.
Do you think that that it was really a raw power play in the Rules Committee to stop the change in the competitive bidding practice for those leases? That it's an attempt by the big oil companies to muscle in and put the smaller independent or smaller oil companies out of business and not allow them in on this.
I don't think there's any bidding. Real question in my mind that was the case. This bill passed overwhelmingly in the Senate. It passed by a 3-1 margin, had broad support of Democrat and Republican alike. But what it did do is, of course, it changed the bidding procedures that would make it more flexible for the smaller and independent companies to have an opportunity for bidding, with the better opportunity for return of royalties to the federal treasury. And the real competition then was who's going to provide the greatest, if they discover oil or gas, who's going to provide the greatest return to the average taxpayer. Now, the big oil boys can get in there pretty cheap, and then if they hit it, of course, it means an enormous kind of return for them. And so their financial and economic interests are carried forward by seeing that this legislation doesn't become law. And I don't think there's any question that they had a strong influence in terms of the outcome of the Rules Committee. Obviously, there are a number of other provisions in this that provide important protections in terms of giving assurances of environmental factors and others, which are extremely important. So I think it was a good piece of legislation, made a lot of sense. It was very important for us in Massachusetts, very important for the Cape and the islands, and I think it was regrettable. I agree with Senator Chafee that I think if that ever got to the floor, that it would be passed and the President would sign, and it would make it's important for us.
In the House Rules Committee, there was a solid Republican opposition, a block in the committee against it.
Well, as I read the accounts of it, the opposition didn't come so much in the bidding procedures for the smaller companies as it did in the provisions in there that the government can get in and take test drillings and the delays that result from that. The problem is on the bill, one of the problems is that there's a provision in there that the federal government can so-called take these test drillings. I voted for the bill, obviously. I voted against certain amendments on it that were in it. But one philosophy is that if you've got a whole group of different companies, small, large, everybody in there bidding, that you're going to get the highest price. Another philosophy is that you let the federal government go in and then take some sample borings, and then they will come up, in theory, with what the property is worth. It's very complicated, but in any event, I think that all of us are anxious to get on with the process and get the companies busy out there so we can find out first if there is oil. Actually, most of the people think there's going to be more gas than oil out there. Get things moving, both for the sake of our states and also for the sake of the nation's energy problems.
That's a question I'm sure in subsequent programs we'll be getting back to, because there is a tremendous amount of interest in it, as you know.
I just think we could talk on. We want to be responsive to your questions, but you know, my strong belief that those resources are under the continental shelf, or those that are under public lands, you know, are basically, I believe instinctively, are owned by the American people.
Within the 3-mile limit or beyond?
No, we're talking about continental shelf now. We're not talking, you know, within what applies in mineral rights or what happens to be recognized under traditional kinds of law. But we have major resources of energy under public lands, and both outer continental shelf and within the United States. And I think it's very important that the American people understand that this is a resources which instinctively belongs, I believe, to them, and not to the oil and gas companies. And we obviously need to see development of this, but we want to make very sure that, particularly in those resources areas, that the interest of the public are going to be preserved to the extent that's possible. Ensuring the incentive for development, but also ensuring the greatest reservation to the average American as possible. We grew up in terms of the leasing program, mineral leasing program, on a different tradition, and where there were overwhelming fortunes that were made in terms of private lands and the rest. But I instinctively feel that I have some real reservations of seeing extraordinary enrichment to major oil and gas companies now, based upon what happens to be off the shores. And the Middle East country is establishing what the price is. And so it's important that we take action. We need the energy. But there are, as Senator Chafee pointed out, some very important questions of fairness and equity, as well as energy. And that's why these things cause a lot of fire.
I don't want to belabor this point, and I want to get on to some other questions, but you mentioned, for instance, about the government not doing its own exploration out there now, that it's all the oil companies. Don't you think the government should?
Well, the problem is that, first place, in talking with the experts, if the government goes out and drills one well, two wells around, wherever it might be, that doesn't necessarily give them all the answers. you just can't find all the answers by a few. It's a game of chance. There's a lot of risk involved, and no one can go out and take some drillings and say, "Aha! This field is worth $200 million, or this field is worth X million." You don't know. And it seems to me the fairest way to do it, and the best way to do it, is let as many people as possible go in there, big people, little people, that's what this bill provides, let them go out and take their sample drillings, and then put it up for auction. The highest bidder gets it. Instead of having Uncle Sam go out and drill and say, this is worth Y dollars, it may not be worth Y, or may be worth a lot more than that. But the problem with all this is everything seems to take so long, and we're tied up in lawsuits and tied up with the government getting into things, and I have a sense of urgency about this whole business. But this is a very, there's a lot
we
of debate.
Fill the whole program here, I'm sure. Here's a question from a Providence listener, Allison Siskind, to Senator Chafee. Why can't something be done to help people whose children go to private schools and pay tuition get a break in the property taxes they pay for schools in their cities and towns? Are you clear? I'm not sure.
Oh, yes. Well, he's talking about the so-called tax credit or some kind of a provision those who pay tuitions at private schools.
Right. And she says further, let me just finish the question. Yeah. The localities obviously can't give up this money, but why can't the federal government give some kind of tax deduction to the people who are paying for two kinds of schools, both private and public?
Yeah, well, let's assume she's talking about both colleges and private schools, elementary and secondary. There have been lots of bills in the Congress dealing with this. Of course, it's extremely expensive anytime you get into anything like that. There's also a deep philosophical viewpoint of let's just take on the elementary and secondary level now, whether it's good to diffuse our educational efforts. In effect, that's what we're doing. Isn't the one argument, strong argument, is that we have our basic, biggest responsibility to making the public schools as good as we possibly can, and they're a long ways from that now. And to draw off money through tax credits or exemptions or whatever you want to call it, it just means there's not that many dollars there. And I think probably a stronger argument for a tax credit of some type is on the college level, and as I say, there are a lot of bills on this. The administration has not seemed to fit to support them, and I think primarily for financial reasons so far. But I have supported. I'm interested in seeing something work out. I'd like to start with the college level first and see if something can be done there.
Senator Kennedy, what do you think?
Well, first of all, if we provide the credit itself, say in the college area, the experience has been quite clear that that's what the rise is going to be in terms of tuition. And they're under a lot of pressures, colleges and universities or schools, and if you provide the kind of credit, everyone gets the credit. I think it's unrealistic to think that the tuition just isn't going to go on up. And so any idea that this is going to be really a bonanza in terms of an individual with many children in school or in college is really quite unrealistic, and the testimony before the Education Committee has reflected this, number one. Secondly, as Senator Chafee has pointed out, we have two ways of making the American taxpayers' money available. One is in direct appropriations, and the other is in tax expenditures, but they're equally in terms of cost. Because if you don't make up the money in terms of tax, if you spend it in terms of tax expenditures, which are credit, somebody else is going to have to make that up. And so if you say you have a certain amount of money, which would be the tax credit, then you have to ask, what is the fairest and the most equitable way, and where is the greatest need in terms of education, if we have a given amount of resources? Now, I know Senator Chafee, because I served with him on the Education Committee, I think all of us who come from a New England tradition, believe in the importance of education and in the support of it. And I think all of us abhor the fact that the federal government pays 90 cents out of every dollar to lay down an interstate highway system, and we pay 7 cents out of every dollar in terms of children in schools, in the public schools. And we say that the education of our children are important. So I'm strongly committed towards improving education and seeing the reallocations of resources in terms of the public education. And
But I think that you run into these other problems when you start to begin to tamper with the tax credit system. Final point, of course, is the constitutional questions. Massachusetts has even a stricter issue in terms of aid to the private schools than even the Constitution of the United States. So, and you have to consider what can be, what would be, or what could be meet those constitutional questions and tests. Different states have different standards, and therefore that's part of the reason why there is such a broad discussion and debate. But it's something that I know deserves a good deal of thought and discussion, and I think we'll continue to give it a lot of attention.
See, I think it is important to bear in mind that we do quite a bit now for private schools. Certainly in Rhode Island we do, through textbooks, through nurse health programs, through busing, programs like that. But obviously I'm sympathetic with the person who probably is paying for their children.
Two different ways, yeah. We have about 2.5 minutes left, which may not be enough time for both of you to tackle this one, from Edward Spencer of New Bedford, who sends his question to Senator Kennedy. President Carter has said that he wants to lessen the penalties for possession of marijuana. Don't you think that this is going to help turn us into a country of junkies?
Well, the federal government has so much resource in terms of dealing with the problems of crimes and violence in this country. And in the areas of drugs, it ought to have an extraordinary effort on the trafficking of drugs, on heroin and all the other kinds of drugs. The question comes down to whether we ought to be expending the $600 million that was expended last year in terms of the individual's use of marijuana. Now, I think if the states want to deal with that issue, let the states deal with it. If the local people want to deal with it, let the local people. But why the federal government should be a part of expenditures of $600 million when we have the kinds of crimes that are in our streets, armed robberies, muggings, rapes, and murders, I think that's where the crime is. And I think it's nice to, you know, slogan about this particular issue, but I think what we ought to, with limited resources, we ought to focus on where the problem is. And I think that is where it's on the trafficking, and that's where the focus comes. And you can, no matter what you're going to put, you can ask the head of the Attorney General at the present time how many resources that they're going to expend to try and do on the casual, and you're going to find that it's going to be limited.
Senator Chafer, we have less than a minute.
I think we ought to chase the hard drug people and do what we can about this. Marijuana, I'm not slighting it, but an awful lot of people are using it, and if we spend our time chasing people who are having a puff somewhere, we just should spend our efforts in a more constructive, better way, in my judgment.
We are out of time. And
I don't think the nation will become a nation of junkies under the president's suggestion.
Of lowering, yeah. I guess the Judiciary Committee took it down to, what, $100 for possession of an ounce or less. That was their recommendation.
Correct.
We are, as I said, out of time. Thank you both for being with us. And once again, thank you for being with us. And if you have a question, send it to the Senators Respond, WTEV, New Bedford, Massachusetts, or Providence, Rhode Island. We'll see you again in 3 weeks. I'm Truman Taylor. Have a good night tonight and a better day tomorrow.